George Marston was also instrumental in the development of the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park.
What he did was to persuade people to sell their land to the state for a park. And I know he was years and years working on one woman who held some very strategic land for the park. She didn't want to sell, but she finally was persuaded by father to sell to the park. And she did. He got that land.
In terms of his own individual effort, probably George Marston's greatest accomplishment for a park development is Presidio Park and the Serra Museum. The project required a tremendous investment in both money and patience, for it was a long time before the Serra Museum and Presidio Park were finally dedicated as the beautiful and historic area familiar to San Diegans today.
The culmination of my father's work was really Presidio Park. He was interested especially in preserving the most important historical spot in California.
Fearing that development in the area would not move along the lines of an historic park dedicated to California's birthplace, Marston and a few others acquired the property. Marston was the only one with a continuing interest in the idea. He soon bought out the others.
So he commenced working on a plan for a park, and it was very largely his idea of the way it was developed. But he did have help from Mr. Nolan and from Mr. Hoyt and from other landscape men, Mr. Carnell of Los Angeles, now and then, whenever he would take a new step in the development, he would ask advice. But a great deal of it was his plan, and he was very fond of it. I think it was Mr. Nolan who suggested that there should be something very definite at the top of the hill where the Presidio really stood. And he said you might have a building that could be a museum or just a building for some purpose. And that rather pleased Father, and he had Templeton Johnson draw up plans for it. Well, Father had very definite ideas of what it should look like, and he changed the plans and got Mr. Johnson to make it according to his idea how it should be, and the building was built.
It was 1929 when the Serra Museum was dedicated. Claire, was there any significance to the date that it was actually, the dedication ceremony actually occurred?
Yes, of course, it was very carefully chosen. The dedication was held on the 16th of July in 1929. It was the 160th anniversary of the founding of San Diego as a settlement, and of course the founding of the very first European, the first Spanish settlement in California. The 16th of July was the historic date on which Father Serra said the first mass in that location on Presidio Hill. Of course, the actual expedition to San Diego had arrived somewhat earlier. They came by sea as well as by land, and they had drifted in. But the 16th of July was the date when when the survivors got together, and Father Serra said mass and dedicated the site. And so it is still celebrated as San Diego's official birthday.
Now, that celebration on July 16th, 1929, drew great crowds to see the new San Diego landmark and to pay tribute to George Marston. Zelma Locker is an author, and she's also a retired city librarian. She was here in San Diego to attend the dedication of the Serra Museum.
Yes, I was there. I didn't live in San Diego at that time, but most of the rest of my family did. They had come out here from the Midwest in that hegira of the 1920s when all of Iowa was moving to California, and the current joke was, what's the capital of Iowa? Long Beach. But I came here in 1931. I was visiting my family at that time, and my mother didn't drive. My father had a new Olds. My car back in Iowa was an old Model T Ford. So I loved to drive my father's car, and we took in many things, and I was interested in California history even then, as far as that was concerned. So We were there for the afternoon. The festivities were a day-long affair. There was a mass in the morning, a band concert at noon, and then the dedication, speeches, pageants, and so on in the afternoon. And it was a very... Oh, there were fireworks at night, too. They called it illuminations, I think, at that time. It was a very hot day. If you get together two people who were there on that day in 1929, the first thing that will be said is, do you remember how hot it was? And they had erected some seating there on Sarah Museum grounds, but most of us sat on the ground. The newspapers afterwards said that there were 10,000 to 12,000 people present, and they were concentrated in that space between the museum and the drive down below it, and then on the hillside up above to the left if you're standing up on the museum arcade. And there were photographs taken at that time, too. Mr. Marston, George Marston, said a few words. He was a very retiring man. He never liked to talk about himself. It's interesting to note that there was no planting on Presidio Hill at that time. The photographs show it up as bare hills. No trees. Well, the ones which there had been some trees set out, but they were just tiny things that were not visible in a photograph, you know, and they certainly didn't dominate the place as the plantings do today. And if you look in the photographs across Mission Valley to the place where Alcalá Park is now and a little further east than that to Linda Vista, those are just bare brown hills that show up in the photograph as just gently curving lines against the horizon, and it's hard for us to realize that today.
Zelma Locker also remembers meeting George Marston at that ceremony.
He was a very retiring man, a very modest man. Of course, we know from the things that he did that he was a man of great vision and a man of great historic interest. He could anticipate that those historic sites should be left and preserved, even though there were some people who didn't want the park at the time and in the years immediately afterward. I have tremendous respect for him.
The Sarah Museum atop Presidio Hill is actually so impressive that many people mistake it for something else.
Interestingly enough, and sadly enough, there are many people living in San Diego today who think that that's the old mission. I've heard it over and over again. And, of course, in the California Room, I had to disillusion people many times on that score. But it was so well done and such a faithful reproduction of mission style, though not any one mission, that that's why people think that.
Zelma Locker, author and former head librarian of the California Room at the San Diego Public Library. Of course, a man like George Marston, who is so prominent in community affairs, is remembered by a large number of people. Orion W. Todd, Jr., who spent his entire business career here in San Diego, recalls serving on the YMCA board at the same time as George Marston.
Well, I remember him as president of the board of directors in which I served, and I used to sit there. He was a very imposing man. He wore a high collar, and I think probably one of the greatest things that you got to say about George Marston, besides a great humanitarian that he was, that at the age of 90, he just was a very independent individual in his own right, and he was having a doctor check on him here. But the doctor told him he had to go to Los Angeles to another doctor. And it all turned out later to become a game. He wanted to ice skate, and they wouldn't let him ice skate down here at the little ice rink we had down here because of his age. And so he went to a doctor in L.A., and they found out later he wasn't going to a doctor in L.A. He was going up there to ice skate. They weren't going to take him away from his chance to ice skate, and he was in his 90s. And so this was the other side of it. He also was a... He loved rowing and the old rowing club in its day. And anything good for San Diego, he was right in there pitching. And his store, there are some giant stores in the nation that some of them still exist, and like Marshall Fields in Chicago, like Neiman Marcus in Texas. Well, everybody in the United States knew George Marston, the Marston Company, and it had the highest respect. There never was a finer department store anywhere in the United States.
Orion W. Todd, Jr. People remember different things about George Marston. From the point of view of personal recollection and also a chronicle of Marston's achievements, we're most fortunate to have a two-volume biography written by his daughter, Miss Mary Marston. It's called George White Marston, A Family Chronicle, and it's available in area libraries. The two books contain a full account of his life and a vivid portrait of an important San Diegan. Miss Marston shares with us now a few of her memories of what her father was like.
He was very religious. He was rather strict in some ways with his children. He brought us up very carefully. And yet he was so full of fun and humor that he never impressed you as overly serious. He was fond of going to the Sunday school, being the superintendent. He enjoyed it. He enjoyed children and doing things for them and with them. Even boys that you wouldn't expect to care about going to Sunday school said, oh, we like to go because Mr. Marston was the superintendent.
We alluded earlier to George Marston's love of ice skating. He had interest and ability in many other sports as well.
As he got older, he became very much interested in playing golf. After he was 70, he played golf every Saturday afternoon. And he was a very good player. He was a good baseball player when he was a young man, and he was good at any sport that he took up. And he was very good at golf. Oh, yes, he loved to swim, and he swam races on New Year's Day in that cold water until the doctor told him he must not do it anymore. He was getting too old for that. So he stopped. He skated from the time he was a boy, and there was a Frenchman who came down from Canada who taught him fancy skating, you know, when he lived in Wisconsin. And of course he hadn't skated from the time he was 18, until he came to San Diego, until the exposition put a little rink on in San Diego, and he began to skate there. And he said that some gentleman came up to him and said, we'll take you around the rink, Mr. Marston. Wouldn't you like to have us? And Father said, why, that would be very nice, and started off with them. And then he said, well, just let me go by myself. And off he went sailing around, cutting figure eights, you know, and all sorts of things. Astonishing, these two men who had offered to help him.
Well, there's yet another of his interests that his daughter remembers, and that is his love of music.
He was very fond of music, and music rested him very much. And after lunch, he would go into the piano, sit down, play, and sing a little. He would sing Spanish songs. He was very fond of them, and Negro spirituals, and even children's songs, Mother Goose songs. He just relaxed that way and had a good time for a half an hour, and then he would be ready to go back to the store and his work. He had a very good voice, baritone voice, but he could sing tenor. And he had a beautiful touch on the piano, although he had had very few lessons, but he just was a natural player.
In the area of music, George Marston was particularly fond of the songs of Sir Harry Lauder. You may have come across some of these among the old 78s in the attic. It's easy to understand why a man with George Marston's good-natured humor would be attracted to songs like this.
I've seen lots of bonny laddies on my travels wide, but my heart is centered new on bonny Kate McBride. Although I'm no a fella that would throw a word away, I'm surprised sometimes myself at all I've got to say. Roamin' in the gloamin' on the bonny banks of Clyde. Roamin' in the gloamin' way, my laddie by my side. When the sun has gone to rise, that's the dame that we love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming.
When Harry Lauder came to San Diego, my father was entranced by his rendition of songs, and father got a great many of his songs and practiced them with the aid of a Scotch maid we had to tell him how to pronounce some of the words, and he used to sing them, and he did it so well that people begged him to do it, and so he had a costume made. They were very interested at the Marston store in making him a proper costume of kilts, and which he wore when he gave these songs. And one of his favorites was, Oh, I Love to Lie in Bed on a Sunday Morning, which was something he never had done himself, but he made it sound very real. And another was Roaming in the Gloaming. And I don't remember the names, but he had at least half a dozen or perhaps a dozen of them. And he sang them. And his brother-in-law, Mr. Hamilton, said he thought he did it better than Harry Lauder himself.
Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming. You can't beat it roaming in the gloaming.
Well, we've had a chance to examine a few of George Marston's individual achievements, and we've had a look at the personality behind them. As we conclude our program, we're going to take a broader view of the context of these accomplishments in the development of San Diego. Lee Grissom, the executive vice president of the San Diego Chamber of Commerce, says that one important part of San Diego's history that sets us apart from many other cities is the fact that our planning efforts go clear back to the beginning of the 20th century, in large part the result of Marston's interest in the subject.
In San Diego, planning was always a deep concern and interest to the residents of this community. And we have been able, through the leadership of not only some of our pioneers, but of people that have followed them, to be able to preserve the unique quality of this area. And I think that George W. Marston may have set the tempo for the entire region. His work with the chamber, not only his presidency of the chamber on two different occasions, but also his work on our park committee, mm-hmm. Led directly to the decision to bring John Nolan into San Diego and to do what was called the Nolan Plan. And the Nolan Plan served as kind of a precursor. It served as an opportunity for the later chamber presidents to draw from it and to start talking about things like the Panama Exposition in 1915 and 16. But I would have to say that, George Marston was a preeminent planner, not only in terms of his dedication while he was active in the community, but also the concepts that he planted as a seed in the community that have continued to develop. Not only obviously things like some of the Balboa Park projects, but would have to include the Sarah Museum and mm-hmm. Presidio Park, and just the deep interest that this community has in that subject. If I'm not mistaken, there are 35 parks in San Diego that have a direct lineage back to the Marston Plan. Mm-hmm. They include Mount Soledad, mm-hmm. I think the Kate Sessions Park is a site that was originally envisioned for it.
Torrey Pines.
Torrey Pines, mm-hmm. La Jolla, just a number of them.
The legacy of George Marston also extends to his family, all of whom have followed his footsteps in making important contributions to San Diego. Lee Grissom begins by talking about his son, Arthur Marston.
His activities with the chamber centered on the development of water, which, of course, in an arid region such as San Diego exists. The population mass we now have and the quality of life we enjoy simply wouldn't have been possible without that dedicated service. It's just incredible what Arthur Marston was able to do in leadership in that area. You hear a lot about Phil Swing, or you hear a lot about the Heilbrunns.
Ed Fletcher. Uh-huh,
and Ed Fletcher, but tremendous dedication of Arthur Marston was very important as well.
And as mentioned in a previous program, it was George Marston's daughter, Mary, and grandson, Hamilton, who offered money for the support of a new study of the San Diego region. The Lynch Appleyard Report, called The Temporary Paradise, is in a real sense a successor to that first Nolan plan.
The things that were important to me, I think, in that report was the recognition that we truly are an international region, enjoying both common opportunities and common problems with our colleagues in Tijuana. And we really hadn't looked at that, or we perhaps had overlooked the opportunities that we have, and particularly the opportunity to come together and serve as a truly remarkable region in this world. We have the opportunity, I think, as we move towards the end of this century and into the next one, to become an international city, almost unparalleled,
mm-hmm.
and with two cultures but working together. And I think that's important. And that was brought out in the Temporary Paradise Report. Also, the fact that that some of our architectural styles, like Cape Cod as an example, or Georgian, or some of these things, have been transplanted into San Diego. But we really turned our backs on the unique architectural opportunities and materials that exist in this area. And I think Kevin Lynch in particular was very articulate in bringing that out. Some of our great early architects like Irving Gill, for an example, recognized the use of native materials, but later generations have turned away from that, particularly as we've become a community of newcomers or transplanted residents, and we've brought the things from our previous location to San Diego with us. It's an we do need, at least intellectually, to look at the unique aspects of this region and to develop architectural styles compatible with that. But there were a number of other things. Obviously, in the Temporary Paradise study, the recognition that San Diego is interlaced by a series of canyons.
Mm-hmm.
Those are unique topographical features and really should be preserved without question. And the recognition of the unique opportunities San Diego has with the interface between the water and the land.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we haven't exploited that in the best sense of that term to the advantage of the community. And so all those, I thought, made Temporary Paradise a very important cornerstone for rethinking city planning in this area. And therefore, it is simply the latest example of the legacy of the Marston family to the sensible planning of this region.
Claire, I think it's very interesting that the daughter and grandson of George Marston have been responsible for sponsoring what is, in a sense, the successor to the first Nolan plans. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the Lynch-Appleyard report. We asked earlier what the effect of the Nolan plans have been on San Diego, and I'd like to ask you a little bit about the Lynch-Appleyard report in the same light. What have they said, and what effect have they had, or do you think they will have?
Well, the Lynch-Appleyard report, which came out in 1974, pointed out many of the things that Lee Grissom mentioned, emphasizing the fact that we have some unique geographic features and vistas, and that it's very important that we take account of these and that we attempt to preserve them. As a matter of fact, they called their report Temporary Paradise and put a question mark at the end of that title because they wanted really to warn us that unless we do something about planning and about implementing the plans, that we may lose some of these things. We may lose this paradise. You know, it may only be temporary. The The old issue of, you know, smokestacks versus geraniums really comes up again currently in this controversy over industrial development versus the environment. And it's the same kind of false issue when it's polarized that way. As our present mayor, Pete Wilson, says, you can't have one without the other. The kind of high technology industry that we want, the kind of corporate headquarters and research and development firms that we want to come and locate in San Diego, these firms are attracted by the kind of environment that preserves air quality and parks and beaches and so on. So we really need to develop both of these at the same time. The Lynch Appleyard report really has provided the philosophical background for San Diego's managed residential growth program, and it has also directed a lot of public attention onto alternative uses for the land right around San Diego Bay. You know, does the airport need to be there? Does the Marine Base need to be there? And so on and so forth. They raised these questions and brought them to public attention.
In conclusion, I'd like to ask you to make a few remarks about George Marston and the importance that he's had on San Diego. We've had a look at some of the things that he's done, and what would you say to conclude the program about these many incredible achievements that George Marston's been responsible for?
Well, the first thing really that comes to my mind is the great humanity of George Marston. When I first began to learn about Marston, he seemed unapproachable in many ways, a great civic benefactor, certainly somebody who did important things, but somehow he seemed rather aloof and formal when I just knew about some of the things that he had done. But then as I began to learn more and I heard some of these delightful recollections about him from people who knew him, and I realized that he was, you know, not only an important civic benefactor and a man of, I think, really great vision for what this area could become. But he was also a man with a charming sense of humor and a great zest for life. And that's certainly illustrated, I think, in the stories about his love of ice skating, you know, that he continued to ice skate up into his 90s. He had a great deal of warmth and compassion and genuine interest in a great many people. These kinds of qualities came out in the relationship that he had with his employees at the store, for example. And I think these qualities underlie his civic activities in promoting park development and comprehensive urban planning and the public library. It was because Marston truly enjoyed people, and he sought to provide a beautiful environment in which the greatest number of people could enjoy themselves that I think we should pay tribute to him. Of all the many things that George Marston was involved in, certainly Presidio Park personifies his most important legacy to all of us because of his role in assembling this land, 30 or 40 acres really, providing a master plan for its layout designed by John Nolan, and providing the handsome mission-style museum building designed by Templeton Johnson, in which the San Diego Historical Society has its offices and its exhibits. When Marston dedicated the museum, he referred to the area as the Plymouth Rock of the Pacific. He felt that this was as important a location to represent our Hispanic and Roman Catholic heritage, although Marston was not a Roman Catholic, but he felt that this location represented the same kind of important historic and cultural legacy to the United States that Plymouth Rock does with its, you know, Protestant, Anglo-Saxon immigrant tradition on the East Coast. The total achievement, this marvelous development of Presidio Park, took George Marston about a quarter of a century and probably about $1 million. And it symbolizes so many things that are important about him, his love of the outdoors, of the trees and of plants, his interest in our Hispanic heritage, his interest in the preservation and interpretation of history, and his desire that this area should be developed and given to the public. when he gave this marvelous gift to the city, having spent so much time and money to have it all landscaped, the roads and buildings constructed, and he gave it to the city in 1929. The city, because of the Depression in the following year, was unable to pick up the bills for maintenance. And so until 1940, George Marston continued to pay for all of the maintenance and upkeep of Presidio Park, which he had already donated. It's a beautiful symbol, I think, of one man's vision and dedication and civic spirit, and it's a handsome visual reminder to all of us that San Diego is indeed the place where California began.
Dr. Claire Crane, San Diego historian and chief historical consultant for this series of programs on local history. With our program on George Marston, we bring to a close our series of biographical studies of 12 men and women who have been important to the history of this city. And we have brought the chronological history up to World War II. Next week, in our final program, we'll be speaking with two San Diegans who have been close observers of the history of San Diego from the 1940s to the present. Our guests will be Neil Morgan, columnist for the Evening Tribune and author of many books on San Diego, and Harold Keene, Channel 8 newsman and reporter for San Diego Magazine. We hope you can join us for the final program in the series, 12 Who Shaped San Diego. Twelve Who Shaped San Diego is a series of radio programs on local history, biographies of 12 great men and women who have left their mark on today's San Diego. A resource packet is available with the series. Send $2 to KPBS-FM, San Diego, California, 92182, and ask for the San Diego History Resource Packet. We also look forward to any comments you might have about the series. The address again is KPBS-FM, San Diego, California, 92182. 12 Who Shaped San Diego is heard Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, with a repeat broadcast Wednesday evenings at 8. I'm Peter Hamlin, series producer, thanking you for joining us. The program is a production of public radio station KPBS-FM and is made possible with a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities.